This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
Well, it's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Philip Gilfus, sitting in the center chair this week, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, First Contact Specialist, Daniel Prue. Now, Daniel, I hear you're getting ready to beam down to visit a society that's about to develop warp drive. How do you think it'll go?
Well, you know, I'm getting pretty excited here, and without being too crass for our family-friendly episode of Earl Grey, I do have to say that I've been going from first contact scenario to first contact scenario, trying to collect as many alien companions as possible. So far, I've experienced the amphibians, mammalians. There's been some species that don't have genders, so I'm really thinking maybe I'll get lucky again this time when I go to have my first contact, if you know what I mean.
Wait, so you're the doctor? I don't know. I mean, all those companions, and you just throw them away when you're done, I bet. Never to visit them again. Oh, well. Well, I'm also joined by my other trusty co-host, the ship's chief anthropologist, Darren Moser, Darren, where are you? Wait, are you wearing that invisible suit down at that pre-warp civilization again?
Yes, but unfortunately they didn't have any left boots in my size, so you can actually see my stylish left calf as I walk around. I have to try to kind of hide it behind the other. It's really embarrassing, though. But fortunately, after having worn a scant for the majority of my adult life, I've toned these legs to perfect perfection.
Well, I'm worried that they're going to start a very well-buffed religion now, based on what they see. Oh, wow. Well, if our listeners can or can't tell, I'm very excited about this episode today. You know, the other series have kind of talked about the subject before, but we've never really talked about a, you know, dedicated episode to it, just with Earl Grey. But we are talking about the Prime Directive, either the founding principle or the bane of your existence here in the next generation. And so I just want to start with two quotes. You know, I know I'm not writing like a high school essay here, but I want to start with two quotes here to kind of set the mood about what we're talking about. So the first is from our, of course, always valiant Captain Picard, and this is from the episode A Matter of Time, and I'm not going to do the Sir Patrick imitation, but here's the quote. "Surely you know of the Prime Directive, which states that we may not interfere in the natural evolution of alien worlds. Now, I have sworn an oath to uphold that directive, but I have disregarded it on more than one occasion, but because I thought it was the right thing to do." Okay. And then our second quote is from the episode The Drumhead, from Admiral Retired Sati, when she is interrogating Picard and says this to him: "Would it surprise you to learn that you have violated the Prime Directive a total of 9 times since you took command of the Enterprise? I must say, Captain, it surprised the hell out of me." So with that beginning discussion, just introductory thoughts, Prime Directive, good, bad, and the ugly memory wipe that we never talk about again. So, Daniel, what are your thoughts on the Prime Directive here?
that's a kind of a loaded question. What do I think about the Prime Directive? I've talked about it a bit on other shows on the network. I feel like the only way to justify how the Prime Directive is brought across on screen across all of Star Trek is that it's not actually a Prime Directive. It's kind of a misleading title. I think it must be some sort of encompassing document. Like when I think when a character on screen says the Prime Directive says, I think of someone in our time saying, "Well, the Constitution says," and I think that it has to be something like that, where it's lengthy and has different moving parts and pieces, and it's complicated, and there are circumstantial things, and because there's no way in all of Star Trek, and even just in TNG, but most all of Star Trek as well, that we're talking about one single rule, because clearly it doesn't apply equal. And we don't have to get into all of that, but I like the idea of the Prime Directive as a concept. I think it's very interesting. I think most of the time it gets a backseat as a plot device, and I wish actually that it was consistently portrayed as serious as it's supposed to be. But I do think of all the captains, without a shadow of a doubt, Picard takes the Prime Directive the most serious.
All right. Okay, very good. And it's interesting you brought up some points we're going to touch on, so I won't spoil it. Now, Darren, what do you think? Shed some light on what you think about the Prime Directive.
Well, I'm feeling really close to who watches The Watchers, because I feel like I've been reduced to Mintaken-level society. I've actually had a slight malfunction with my primary fusion generator here at the Dr. Sci-Fi compound, and don't ask me how I'm recording. I basically am speaking into a gramophone at this point, but no, I think, you know, Star Trek, like Daniel said, it's more like primary, it's the prime guideline, you know, it's almost like in spirit it's supposed to drive you to make good choices. But I mean, Picard himself said in a well-known season one episode, no law can be a law of absolutes. No society can be built with just absolutes. You have to have instances where, you know, no law can apply to everything. So I don't mean to
jump in, Darren, but I have to ask, was that before or after he was talking about the Sith? Because I'm pretty sure only the Sith deal in absolutes.
That and Badmirals. They're pretty much the same side of the same coin. But no, I think, you know, he's right. And as I would trust Picard's character to make a judgment call on things like that. If he's violated the Prime Directive nine times, then I'd say those are nine pretty dang good reasons.
Right, and that was only by the fourth or fifth season, so who knows?
That's true. he's shooting for a Baker's dozen.
To date. Yeah, true. Now, Darren, because you have obviously looked at my notes, because you have already made the segue into obviously what our listeners, I mean, I don't have to tell them, our listeners of Earl Grey, that you have already alluded to what's universally known as the best season one episode in all of Next Gen. In fact, if all of Star Trek, if I'm not mistaken, that has its own hashtag and exclamation
point. Don't go all Daniel
point
on us and start making these grandiose comments that apply to the entire franchise, okay?
Oh, God.
Well, there is a godlike being. So, but the first thing I wanted to talk about, because we're going to go chronological here, and we're probably not even going to touch on any, I mean, we may in our discussion, but I'm like not even getting past season four, because there's just so much already in Next Generation. You could talk about the Prime Directive for a whole week. And you know, who knows? But Justice! One of the first times, exactly. I want to see those hashtags, people. It's one of the first times, I mean, even not very the first time, but one of the first times we really see the Next Generation tackle the Prime Directive. And I don't, you know, again, I don't think I need to tell our listeners what this episode is about, but in case someone wandered in from the orb or something, let me give the quick summary. This is when the crew of the Enterprise beams down to the Sexy Time planet, and you know, it's sort of an idyllic society. It's kind of Risa, except without the technology. And Wesley beams down, and apparently there's very few laws, but all the laws on this planet are death penalty laws. And Wesley accidentally breaks a stupid law, but even though he didn't know about it, so he sends us to death. And then Picard has to figure out what to do. But then the secondary story is that there's this huge godlike alien on the planet or orbiting the planet, and they're basically going to like blow up the Enterprise if they don't, you know, do what they're supposed to do right. And so the conflict is, does Picard, you know, let Wesley be killed and maybe this will let the Edo Guardian let them live? Or does he try and fight for the life of his crew member and then risk the Edo Guardian destroying him? And Daniel, you said this earlier, and this is something I really want to pick up on about the Prime Directive, right? Because, you know, Prime Directive, what's the first word you think about? Non-interference, right? But this, you mentioned the Prime Directive has multiple components, and that's what this episode is all about. Because it's not about non-interference per se. This is that weird part of the Prime Directive that basically says when we beam down to another planet, we follow their laws, right? It's not like, well, we just follow Federation laws, and he didn't break Federation law, we don't care. No, he broke that planet's law. And when we're with that planet, we have to follow their laws. And so, I don't know, what do y'all think about, I'll go Daniel first. You know, that was sort of the conflict I've tried to kind of sandwich or encapsulate it. I don't know if I've said it perfectly, but what'd you think about this conflict, Daniel? And more importantly, have you ever cosplayed in those uniforms?
Well, okay, there's a lot there to address. Before that, though, I do want to...
Thanks for that mental image, Philip.
Well, you're the one that's been wearing scants forever, Darren, so I don't think you have any room to talk. But I do actually, this is a very important point that I wanted to make real quick before I get into that, is a quick disclaimer. The opinions expressed on Earl Grey by Philip Gilfus in no way represent the larger Earl Grey cast... or Trek FM, or really any sane people anywhere on the planet about justice. So he's strictly speaking for himself when he talks about justice.
I'm going to remember this for our last episode we talk about, Daniel. So keep going.
Well, you know, there are facts and then there are opinions, Philip, and that's the difference. But anyways, no, I feel like, but to be serious, that justice has this component. Like, okay, so there are there are different pieces of the Prime Directive, and the reason I think Picard can get away with doing what he does is the fact that this is a completely enlightened society that is well aware of the existence of outside cultures and alien species and does their thing, and they had already, you know, it isn't a contamination issue because the Enterprise crew is some of them are probably actually actively engaging in some very intimate activities. So I feel like, you know, it's not...
Are they playing ball?
Well, there are games that they are playing, but, you know.
I don't know. Like, when it comes to the death of a crew member, like, there's got to be a level at which the Prime Directive is kind of superseded by... common sense, I guess, right? Presumably, I know that's a slippery slope because that's definitely in Star Trek. That's definitely played as a wishy-washy subject. But I don't know. I think Picard is completely justified in his actions in that episode.
Right. Okay. Well, Dan, you're sort of almost arguing the Dr. Crusher perspective in that episode. I mean, even though we can say she's not being totally objective because it's her son, but she's still saying, well, this is stupid. You know, why are we even talking about this? Beam them up and let's get out of here. But Darren, what do you think? And you watched this recently. So what do you think about this?
I did. I hadn't seen Justice in a while, but upon rewatching it, it was actually a pretty engaging episode. I mean, you in your paraphrase of their laws, like, you know, death penalty for all, but it's actually more complex than that. The whole planet is divided up into zones, and their police or enforcers are the only ones who know which zones are actually being enforced at any given moment. So the general populace is like, well, yeah, I don't see an enforcer around, but that doesn't mean that they're not watching this zone. I don't want to take the risk that I break a law inside this zone. And so it's not even a a fear thing. It's just more of a, you know, utilizing their resources. So they're effectively policing a planet, but not literally having shock troopers everywhere. So in that aspect, I was like, okay, that's, if you could actually install a system like that on a planet, which, I mean, society-wise would be very difficult to do, but if you could do that, it actually makes a lot of sense. But you do need that small caveat of, you know, well, who tells the outsiders don't play in the potted plants, you know? And maybe that's why we have, you know, different degrees of death. Maybe, you know, maybe they'll be mostly dead in the beginning, but
could you put a sign up that says keep off the grass? Is that asking too much? Come on.
You can tell who the enforcers are because they're the ones wearing the bulletproof vests, right? Like and the badges and stuff, right? You definitely know.
They show the least amount of skin, and that's how you know they're not here for fun. They're here to work. And
and after they work hard, they like to play hard.
But no, I mean, as much as you've been ranting about Justice in my ear, Philip, upon watching it again, it was, you know, an enjoyable episode. And yes, it does suffer from season one-ness of, they're definitely still finding their characters. There's still a little bit of Picard and Beverly, like, that they wouldn't act like this in season 7 or 6. But, you know, beyond that, it's fun, and it... Boy, of anything, it just really highlights how terrible a relationship Riker and Troy have. Boy, this is this just puts it to the... Oh, yeah, I don't even want to go there, but yeah.
Well, Darren, I like how you... And I don't know if this was the point you're making, but I'll steal your words and make it your point. That behind every idyllic paradise... It's basically a fascist police state. That's what it is, right? That's, you know, everyone. You never know when and where the police are.
That's right. Odo would be very, very happy on this planet. Absolutely, yeah.
It's like, I like this planet. I'm gonna go become that white barricade and just pop up somewhere. Oh, this area is now a white zone. Ha ha! I caught you inside it.
Now, and one of the things I love about this episode, I know people think I'm exaggerating, but I'm not, is that, you know, like, remember, this is season one, right? We're still like, is this just TOS again? And one thing that we see Picard do that we like, oh, well, Kirk would never do this, where Picard's like, okay, well, all right, well, you can keep Wesley. You know, we're not just going to beam him up and keep him. We'll follow your law. We're going to be very PC about this and, you know, follow a process, you know. But at the same time, where people might think like, oh, well, Kirk would just say, you know, forget this, we're not following your stupid laws. The catch in this episode is that they don't have a choice because they have this all-powerful being in the planet that will, you know, zap them to kingdom come if they don't follow their own rules. Because my favorite part is that, and you'll have to remind me, Darren, but basically the Edo has sort of like scanned the Enterprise computer and knows their laws, knows the prime directive, and the Enterprise and crew are in the position of being judged by their own laws. So if Daniel, like you said, if they're just like, I mean, we call it the prime directive, it's more of a prime suggestion, and so the Edo's going to be like, well, you guys are terrible, why, you know, boom, you're exploded, you know, and so they're facing that position.
And Philip, you must be a little rusty on the episode because clearly, you know, the being above the planet is not all powerful because only Geordi can fully see it when he's looking out the window. So
I was going to say that it's very lucky it's like half phased into this reality because, I don't know, I'm pretty sure, actually I'm definitely sure one photon torpedo could probably take out this being. Anybody? Anybody? Okay, this model was also used in the future episode where the Enterprise crew memory is erased, and that's actually the base
conundrum
that they're sent to destroy, that one photon torpedo would detonate.
Oh, no, that's good catch there. I did not notice that.
That's true.
Yeah, it's actually the same model. It's fully there, not phased out. But
is that the one with McDuff?
Yeah, the one with McDuff. Yeah,
I love McDuff. He's awesome.
It's only a model. Yeah. And so, I think it's definitely, you know, and y'all had already quoted the ending there, Darren, with Picard basically saying, you know, look, true justice is not black and white. There have to be. He doesn't say shades of gray, but I'm putting those words in Picard's mouth. There's shades of gray, and the, I guess the Edo Guardian winks at them virtually and says, okay, well, you got me on that one, and lets them beam up and leave, and everyone's happy. So,
my favorite line was when Data was like, "We probably shouldn't have put colonists down in this planet or in the system. That was probably a bad move."
You know, and the problem too with the episode is that it's so simplistic in its view of, and I know, I guess maybe that's kind of the point, but like, the fact like, and this is kind of what Roddenberry does a lot, you know, not to trash talk him or anything, but like
that Roddenberry, gosh,
you know, he gets these ideas in his mind sometimes, and I think maybe he just thinks he's so clever, he just doesn't think it through. But it's like, you have an entire society of people who literally cannot think in gradients, like, so like, they're not like, they can't see this concept of, oh, these people don't belong to our society, maybe they don't understand our rules, maybe it's totally okay that they trip while playing ball for the first time. And, you know, and it's not a huge deal. It's just like, it's kind of patently absurd on its face. I mean, I understand that it explores larger themes, but it's like, there's no subtlety to it at all. And it's like, come on, really? Come on. He falls into a garden. Come on. Come on.
Hey, that's how it all started. I mean, Original Sin, man. Good thing you didn't eat an apple.
Well, there's two, you know, well-spoken lines. One by Tasha, where she goes, who tells, you know, newcomers about these so-called laws? That's a very good point, Tasha. And the second one is, no, Wesley, it's death to touch new planted flowers. Wait, what? Wait, okay. I mean, that just came out of a kid's mouth.
No, my favorite part would be like, and whose job is it to inquire about local laws, Tasha? Would that be like a security function?
Oh, snap.
No, I think those are
I just loved how many times Wesley was called the boy. Because it's like, okay, if at least his life is in danger, can we at least call him by his name? I mean, you know, Wesley, the boy, would you maybe want to beam down there to see if this plan is good for young people? I mean, Picard, you just don't know how to talk to kids, obviously.
We don't want to encourage any irresponsible behavior, but if anyone wanted to do a drinking game, and we're not saying what you'd have to drink, a drinking game in season one, every time anyone says the boy in a season one episode, that would be a good one. Yeah, I think my two challenges with this episode, but again, it's so TOS-y, you know, it's a TOS complaint that, one, they're beaming down to a pre-warp civilization. It's like, yeah, we're just beaming, you know, like in TOS, they just beam down to like the tribal culture, be like, hey guys, here we are with our phasers and communicators, what's up everyone? You know, I'm like, what, they don't, what, why are we even here? And then second of all, that they like, let's just beam down to the planet. Well, shouldn't we learn more about the society and the laws? Nah, it'll all be good. All right. Well, I feel like we've done justice to this episode. All right. Our sort of second.
I just knew that 90% of this episode was going to be about justice. I just knew.
I mean, it was actually going to be the whole episode, but you know, I figure there's always another day. This is not the official justice episode, everyone.
We talked him down, folks. We said, okay, Phil, could you at least just broaden it out to like the Prime Directive or something? I mean, you could include justice. I mean, we can start with it, but. But, I mean, could we just at least have a broader topic? But no. Philip crafted this wonderful episode all on his own.
That's right. Hashtag justice. All right. So the next early Prime Directive dilemma is second season and is the episode Pen Pals. And this is the episode where Data gets a pen pal. And
correspondence letter?
Evil twin brother? No. Where he is corresponding with this young alien girl for some bizarre reason.
Say this in a non-creepy way, Philip. Please try.
There's no way. There's literally no way to make this episode non-creepy. It's impossible to do.
And her planet is in peril. And I'm sort of fast-forwarding the synopsis here. And basically, long story short, you know, Data reveals to the captain, by the way, I've broken the Prime Directive. Is that a thing? Because it's only the second season, I'm not sure where I stand. And Picard's like, oh Lord, has a big comfortable informal meeting in his office where they debate the Prime Directive, and then in the end they decide to just, you know, screw it and save the planet, and wipe her memory because it's Pulaski on board, and we can do that only in the second season. So I'll switch order here. So Darren, pen pals, Prime Directive, you know, there's literally a debate in this episode.
Yeah, not only are they debating this like in the lounge, you know, cabin room, but he's literally seconds from pushing the off switch when we just happen to hear Data, I'm scared, and like it's like he knew, you know, it's like Data knew, hey, if Picard hears a small child, you know, he'll have to change his mind. But Data in this episode, he feels very much like a Benzite. Like, you know, oh, look, there's a weird transmission. I'm not going to tell anyone about it. I'm just going to make first contact with a pre-warp civilization and get all my findings first. You know, I think he was taking a little bit too much, you know, guidance from Ensign Men, of the Ben. I'm sorry. It's just, they all look alike to me. But no, I think, you know, yeah, Data definitely puts his positronic foot right in it, but it does, you know, it does work out because we have a magic gypsy fairy on board that can erase people's memories. So, you know, we're good.
And then we forget that she was ever there. Daniel, now you of course are a big Data person. So what's going on here, Daniel?
Yeah, that's a great question. What is going on during Pen Pals? I don't know if anybody actually knows the answer to that question. It's a really strange episode, but I'm glad that you brought up the scene. I actually really love the scene where they're all just kind of huddled together. It must be the precursor to the observation lounge room, you know, Geordi PowerPoint scenes that became a staple of the Next Generation later on. But it's much more it feels much more informal than that. Like, people are just shooting off ideas. It's not, you know what I mean? Nobody has prepared anything. It's just like a conversation is going back and forth. And clearly they did it as this is what the Prime Directive is. This is what it states. This is one side of the argument. This is the other side of the argument. And I actually really like it. It's very quick. The scene's only a couple minutes long, but it's one of my favorite, honestly, from the whole season, actually.
And I'm very proud of Worf not just, like, putting a knife in Pulaski's throat when she called him a coward, you know, because that's pretty much the first contact scenario there.
If you were any other woman, I would kill you where you stand.
Oh, goodness. But, yeah.
But
and,
you serve him tea, so it's all good.
That's right. That's right. And again, I know for most of our listeners, you know, they've sort of heard the Prime Directive debate, but let me just echo it, right? Because here Picard's giving his, you know, philosophy class, Ethics 201, you know, session with his students and saying, okay, well, we have some strong feelings here. You know, some think, like Worf, that maybe it's a black and white, you know, Prime Directive, don't interfere. We have some more passionate people like Pulaski who's saying, you know, I don't care what the rules are. We have to save a life. Let's do it. So where's the line? Do we interfere when there's a natural disaster? Do we interfere when, you know, there's a war? And, you know, where's the line here? And what are our beliefs here? For one thing, I thought it was funny because, again, it comes back to, isn't the Prime Directive the Prime Directive? It's like, let's talk about how we can break it. I'm like, what?
And again, this is why I feel like it has to be like a constitution-like document, because it's like, okay, so, you know, here in America, we have these rights, like, say, the right of speech, just for example, and it's a fundamental right that we all share, but it is, what is the word I'm looking for?
Unlimited.
It's not an unlimited right, right? So there are places where it starts and stops. There are things you cannot do, even though you have that fundamental right. And I feel like the only way to make sense of the Prime Directive is to look at it in the same way. It's just like, yes, this is our big, major rule, but there are times, clearly there are times, because if any other... we don't have an exact equivalent of it now, but I mean, if there was a leader who broke the main rule, the main law of the land, they would face serious consequences of it. And we see again and again and again on Star Trek these captains breaking this law, and it's okay. It's always excused. Like you said, Philip, in the one episode they mentioned in Drumhead, would you say 9 times, was it? Like,
yep, yeah.
That's insane. Like, that's... you know, if he hadn't been, that's the main law. It's the Prime Directive. So there has to be gradations of it. There has to be acceptances for it. And it's like 9 times. Otherwise, he would have been kicked out of Starfleet years ago.
I mean, that's like going to like Talos 4 like 3 times, basically, right?
Exactly, exactly.
I know it makes me wonder if there's some fan out there who's combed through all the episodes previous to the Drumhead and found those 9 times. You know, I mean, we got Justice, you know, who watches The Watchers? I mean, I'm sure, I mean, maybe they just pulled a number out, or maybe they actually picked 9.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually my favorite lottery scratch-off game. But, you know, again, I think... And I know there's a lot of people who disagree with the Prime Directive. I mean, in Trekdom and Trek fans, and they like to see it as a storytelling conflict, right? Because here, you know, we actually do have conflict in Next Generation, and it's about where Picard's, and I believe this, and I know I may be out there, but I do that Picard's saying it's not only it's protecting us. Because it's this part where we think we have the technology and we can save the universe because we're all great and wonderful. But this Prime Directive protects us from, I mean, doesn't say this, but basically playing God and deciding who lives and who dies. And of course, people will say, well, that's too easy because, you know, when someone's going to die, then you need to help them. But again, it's, you know, I'm definitely more in the Picard camp, but I'm sure others are maybe more in the, you know, saving lives camp about, you know, we can't play God out there when we have the power. I don't know if everyone agrees with that. And they would just say, well, if you save a life, save a life. Would you ignore that little girl's cry, Daniel?
They technically do anyways, right? Like, doesn't she end up dying or at the end?
No, they help her and they erase her memory.
Oh, that's right. They bring her to the top of the mountain, or they tell her to go to the top of the... whatever, I can't remember. I don't know. It's funny because this is like a huge parallel to, almost a direct parallel to Into Darkness, right? and we get to see how the two crews handle it differently. The new Kirk crew. And
okay, draw it out for me, Daniel. I'm not seeing how Pen Pals is like Into Darkness.
There are volcanoes. I will grant you that. There is lava.
Okay. Oh, you mean the beginning of Into Darkness.
Right. Yes, the opening sequence. Yes.
Okay. I was thinking of the movie as a whole, and I'm like, I'm really not seeing that, Daniel. Please connect the dots for me. Okay, yes.
Well, it's true. White skin looks just like Khan. I mean, it's pretty much...
Isn't that how you
see
him?
No, of course.
But yes,
yeah, no,
I
of
agree,
course.
Daniel.
The only mention or you know, discussion of the Prime Directive in all of JJ Trek happens, you know, the best, in my opinion, the best part of Into Darkness is that 10-minute sequence. But anyways, it doesn't matter. That's not the point. But
what about the part within the cells?
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. Would I let the girl die? I guess you're kind of painting me as a villain no matter what I say at this point. Like,
My favorite part is where, like, you know, well, this person matters, and then Worf's like, to Data.
That's actually my biggest problem with the episode, is the fact that Data doesn't have empathy. He doesn't have this emotional reaction, a natural emotional biological reaction to youth and innocence that... Data would be just, it's an algorithm. Data would say, Prime Directive supersedes 99% of all of my other orders, whatever, she's going to die. I'm not even going to respond. Like, there's why would he care? I don't understand that part.
But that's a great point, though, Daniel, because you'd think about it. Why else do we have the Prime Directive? Because we have our emotions and they would jade decisions we would make. I mean, it's almost like, I can't believe I'm quoting it, but it's almost like Star Trek Insurrection, where, yes, quote unquote, everyone's judgment is being impaired by the metaphasic, you know, particles, but Data. And they're like, well, Data, so what should we do? This is almost kind of the same situation where I think if anyone was to make a judgment call and weigh the Prime Directive versus the best outcome, it would be Data, because you're right. He has no emotions. He's not making an emotional decision. He's like, someone's calling for help. You know, we should help them.
So you're saying this is the Prime Directive version of Lock and Load?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I painted you into that corner correctly. Okay, guys. So the next episode I want to talk about, now Daniel, settle down. The next episode I want to talk about is Who Watches the Watchers, which is
Justice
is
again, right? We're going
another
to talk about
Prime
Justice
Directive
again.
Episode. Well, the poor man's justice, I believe that's what the Star Trek Companion calls it. I mean, you can check with Larry. These are not my words. But again, you know, so I, you know,
poor man's justice.
Let me do the brief recap. Okay, so the brief recap of the episode is, you know, this is the one where the Enterprise rescues the archaeologists or the anthropologists that are there with the pre-warp, the proto-Vulcan civilization. You know, they beam down trying to rescue them. One of the people are injured. Beverly beams them up. He sees Picard, goes down, starts the religion of the Picard, and the hijinks ensue. So that's more or less at the quick version. But you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and go to Daniel. Daniel, you know, we've been talking about the Prime Directive. This is an episode that you have some passing familiarity with, I believe. So what are your thoughts here about the Prime Directive and Who Watches the Watchers, written by Daniel Prue?
Well, if anybody's really interested going in depth into Who Watches the Watchers, they should check out the Ready Room that we all did together way, way long ago about Who Watches the Watchers. Because not only is that a fantastic episode, I'm in it as well, so it's really good. But no, this is the quintessential early on Prime Directive episode. This is what separates Picard from every other captain in respect to the Prime Directive, essentially, right? Like Kirk, even though we're not really the Prime Directive is kind of ill defined in the original series, it's mentioned, and then Sisko, he brings it up occasionally, but he doesn't have any problems gassing planets, so whatever, it's not a big deal, you know. And then Janeway, let's not even get into Janeway. And then, of course, Archer doesn't have a Prime Directive to deal with, so it's not a problem for him. But of all the captains that we get in Star Trek, Picard is, for the most part, the strictest, is the most conservative. He's the hardest line Prime Directive guy. And I think a lot of that comes from this episode specifically, because there is the line when Beverly beams the injured Mintaken up, and he's like, "You should have let him die." Like, and it's like, whoa, buddy, whoa, maybe chill out. But he really does believe in this concept. He really, I've mentioned it before, but I feel like he, like, in the same way that we have this, like, in, as Americans, most of us, you know, here, well, all three of us on the podcast are Americans, but most of our listeners probably also come from America.
I'm mostly American.
You know, we have this, like, innate defense of things, like, just for an example, like the First Amendment, right? Like, we hear it, and we want to protect it as best we can. We want unlimited freedom in that respect, even if it's not maybe reasonable or possible or logical to think that might happen.
Sir, I disagree with what you say, but I will fight to the death your right.
Exactly.
To say it.
You know, we wish we lived in that society where you have the ability. And I think that Picard has the same knee-jerk reaction to, And I don't think it's technically a knee-jerk reaction because he seems like a very well-thought-out man, but I think he holds that value so dear, the prime directive, that it takes a lot for him to break it, even though he does break it, but every captain does, essentially, is what we come to expect in Star Trek. And I think it's probably, you know, proven throughout the whole of Star Trek that he holds it closest, and we've learned that in this episode.
Would it surprise you to hear, Daniel, that Captain Picard has performed this prime directive 9 times? I'll tell you, surprised the hell out of me.
Now, and Dan, I mean, you make a great point, with the whole episode, and I think the interesting part, you know, if you take the Picard side, I mean, you could almost say he's right. I mean, if Beverly had let, and I'm blanking on the characters' names, if you hit let the guy die, you know, by letting him live, started like a whole new religion, and you had the whole cultural contamination, and I mean, that's the whole prime directive, that we don't want to interfere in the natural evolution of culture. So Darren, what do you think about this episode?
Well, I first want to touch on, obviously, the obvious parallels between this episode and Star Trek Insurrection. I mean, obviously, it's not the exact same plot, but you have the duck blind in the beginning, and it's almost like it could have gone, you know, Insurrection could have gone this way, but it, because they were a warp-capable species, they just didn't show it. It was almost like a pass, like, oh, hey, it's okay. We once traveled the stars as you, and this is totally not, you know, freaking us out right now, which is very different from, you are the Picard, I'm going to create a religion around you. But Daniel said, you know, Picard is so well written in this episode, and he has to make some really tough decisions, and that's, you know, his character almost had to grow as he made decisions and had to live with the consequences of, not wanting to be a god figure. And so, but yeah, it's a good episode though. I really enjoy it. I like how it with the whole duck blind thing, you know, we're getting to see other aspects of the Federation. You know, it's like we're seeing what those science ships are doing. We're seeing what researchers are doing. I mean, we know there's this Starfleet, you know, science division that does all sorts of crazy stuff, you know, but we never really see them. You know, we just see this episode and a couple others. We know, you know, the Hansons are idiots off in their Raven, you know, getting infected by the Borg, you know,
worst in danger.
Parents ever. I think they take the cake even over Worf. But,
I mean, I would say she developed pretty well, but, you know, maybe that's just from one perspective. That's all.
Oh, good. Well, you know, and it's interesting, one of the things about the Prime Directive that's kind of debated is, who does the Prime Directive apply to? Is it just a Starfleet, or is it Federation-wide?
Is it Federation? Because I think it's interesting. That's a good point.
Yeah, because I think in this, or is it like a Starfleet Directive? Because in this episode, you have the, and again, I'm blanking on all names, but you have that chief scientist who tells Picard, like, oh no, you should totally go down and be their god and give them commandments in some kind of tablet form. And I don't know, maybe 10 of them? I'm remembering this from a movie. Yeah. And, you know.
15,
and
Picard's, I mean, 10. 10 commandments.
But Picard is like, I think, and maybe I'm misremembering this, but I swear he says, like, are you kidding me? You swore the same oath I did or something.
Yeah.
But,
It is Federation-wide. I mean, because I can't kind of picture, you know, like the outrageous O'Connor just like beaming down to any planet he wants and just becoming God just because he, you know, it's almost be like this black market of coordinates for planets that are pre-warp and, you know, are very influenceable. Because you would have totally bad people just zipping all around.
It also almost seems like the Prime Directive would be completely unnecessary in a universe as populated as the Star Trek universe. Because, okay, maybe the Starfleet people, and maybe if you want to extend it, the Federation people cannot interfere with these cultures. But what's to stop the Ferengi from taking advantage of every backworld culture? What's to stop...
like they do in the game.
Right, exactly. And what's to stop the Cardassians from oppressing every nearby world? Like, what's to stop these other races from doing it? And it seems like that there's so much overlap in the territories and stuff like that. It's like, are we really protecting these people anyways? Like, what, whose good are we serving?
Well, and what if, like, it's all about the timing, you know, because this whole pre-warp thing. Well, what if we happen to be researching a system and, you know, we just show up and that happens to be there, you know, July 18th, 1969, and they have, like, a rocket heading towards their moon, and we're just like, you don't see us, we're not here, dang, okay, well, now we're definitely influencing your culture because you think there are spaceships out here. You know, I mean, what is this magical line of a warp drive? Like, just because that was the line that humanity had to step over, you know, the Vulcans still didn't even think we were ready for a lot of things at the time.
And it's not consistent either. Like, you might think that the first contact standard of warp drive is consistent with the, you know, with what we get as the Prime Directive, but it's not, because there are definitely warp capable cultures. We just talked about one, Injustice. Presumably, at least they're aware of warp capability. If they don't have it themselves, they're certainly aware of it. So it's like, but apparently the Prime Directive still applies to them. That's why it's so muddy and ill-conceived and not very well defined, that we don't really know what the Prime Directive says about these species. It's used so inconsistently.
And that's true. It's you know, is the warp capability because, oh, well, they might be getting out here, or it's more like, hey, we can travel between stars. Maybe there's other people that can travel. Is it like just an awareness, not so much technology level? I mean, yeah, we could not have warp drive or have really crappy warp drive that doesn't get us very fast, and, you know, when do we get invited to the big kids' table?
Well, then you just mess up and then you have pack lives, that's just not good. So
we look for things.
Things to make us go.
Well, and it's interesting because with the Watchers episode, you know, as we kind of talked about when I think we were on the Ready Room, you know, you have that rap session at the end, like it's the end of a G.I. Joe episode of like, hey kids, what did we learn? But basically, where they're just talking with the Mintakans and like, oh, well, you know, we kind of messed up this whole thing, but, you know, but I'm sure you'll be fine. You know, I imagine, you know, like the standard joke over at Standard Orbit where there's that ship that follows around Kirk's ship. Of course, in the Next Generation, we all know it's the Hood. The
cleanup ship.
That's following the Enterprise. So I think maybe the Hood had to stop by a Mintaka and clean things up. Maybe they had a doctor who knew how to erase memories correctly. So, you know, one thing that we've already talked about, and we've said this word continuously throughout this episode, but it is also an episode of the same name. And it is also a celebration that we just had in the past few days. And that is First Contact, which, if you're listening to this, we just celebrated a couple days ago on April 5th. So First Contact Day. So First Contact, not only was it a great episode, I mean, not only is it a great movie, it was also a good episode. And again, do the quick recap. This is where Riker's in disguise on the planet that is just about to develop warp drive. He gets injured, put in a hospital. They discover he's human. And then Picard and Troy are making first contact with the leaders of this planet. And basically the whole thing goes to heck, basically. And it's, but it's sort of a look into how the Federation and Starfleet makes first contact, which we've never really seen before, at least with a new warp civilizations. So, Daniel, what'd you think of this episode?
It's good. Like you, I like that it establishes kind of the procedure that we never really get. We never, ever, let me search my memory banks here, we never really get this aspect of Star Trek. Again, it's super important to Star Trek, but we never get this. Like, Picard explains, this is what we do when we try to reach out to alien species for the first time. And apparently we're much more tactful and discreet than the Vulcans were, because the Vulcans are like, you have warp drive, here we come. And like, they just land like right where you are. but we're like, no, we have covert agents. They, like, you know what I mean? They infiltrate and they learn and they observe. We have spies, basically, right? We have a bunch of spies.
I think this is actually Section 32 that's in charge of First Contact.
And it's really interesting. It's super interesting, and I cannot believe that Deep Space Nine or Voyager, Enterprise didn't pick up on it again, because it's like you could do a lot of really interesting things with this. I like the episode overall. It's a solid episode, and we do learn a lot about First Contact procedures in the Federation. I wish we got to see more of it.
And Darren, what'd you think?
Yeah, this was really a fun twist on the whole, you know, First Contact, because it's a First Contact gone wrong. It's, they saw us. I mean, not that, you know, who watches The Watchers isn't also a First Contact gone wrong.
And Insurrection.
We just can't get this thing right. But it is even worse because one of our men is captured. Well, I guess that's pretty much just also like, you know, who watches The Watchers. But
every episode.
You know, there are differences, I'm just saying. Riker's in trouble. He's one of the ones that's captured. No, wait, that's the same as who watches what.
No, this is the episode where Riker gets lucky.
Oh, wait.
That's what it is.
But no, I really like the character of the kind of overseer guy with the glasses who is just like super paranoid.
Quote unquote conservative.
Yeah. And he was just, you know, but he was right. He's like, we don't know anything about these people. Like, we don't know, like, what we can trust from them. And, you know, I think he had a lot of, you know, pretty valid points to make. But a good episode. I mean, again, that's what's nice about the Prime Directive, because it is so broad, apparently, is that we can, you know, we can have a lot of different episodes with that topic, but it doesn't feel the same.
Darren, you are aware that he was the bad guy of the episode, right?
No, I'm aware. Okay.
Yeah. He represented fear of the unknown.
No, we can see all points of view, Daniel. Maybe he was right, huh? Maybe he was right.
You know what? I didn't think about it clearly until you said it in a softly spoken voice. Now I've learned my lesson. I apologize, Darren.
Now everything is questioned now.
See, that's what they say in Cosmos.
I mean, he was willing to torture Riker. I mean, you know, and willing to frame him. But okay, that's fine. That's fine. Go ahead, Philip.
But kill himself for his beliefs. That totally isn't a fundamental. Oh, wait. I guess that is. But anyway. Well, we've talked about like sort of all the Prime Directive going wrong, but you know, at least in theory, this is supposed to be the Prime Directive going right. You know, yes, we're worried about contamination, we're worried about interference, but you know, once they get warp drive, you know, you infiltrate, like you said, Daniel, get in touch with the leaders, you present your case, you say welcome to the neighborhood, you bring some flowers, some, you know, something to eat, I don't know, and you know, this is whatever you all want to do, however you want to proceed, but if you want us to leave, we'll leave, and you know, it's all very in a nice calm Chakotay voice that Chakotay. We're just here to help. You know, but I mean, like that's like, because like you said, Daniel, and I know you're you know, trying to be funny, but like as opposed to the big honking spaceship going boom, here we are, you know, but you know, they've learned over the years that, you know, if, because again, there's no easy way to do it. I mean, think about if that was being done to us. Some may say it is. You know, an alien species was disguise among us. I mean, there's no easy way for them to say, hey, welcome to the interstellar neighborhood. I mean, there's no easy way to drop that into a leader or to, you know, whatever. So it's always going to be shocking no matter what. But because also what this episode does, I mean, we talked about is sort of, and I know these are sort of pejorative terms depending on your own beliefs, but I mean, I think it's valid. The sort of progressive liberal, whatever, versus the conservative status quo. Because, I mean, what you could argue is that the quote-unquote bad guy, the conservative, was right, that this culture wasn't ready to absorb, we're part of this huge thing. Because remember, their belief was that they were, like, the center of the universe. I can't remember it exactly, but something like that.
It's just us. You know, there is no beyond. And I liked how that episode touched upon, you know, like you said, it's almost like a belief. It's part of their belief system. And I mean, how would our world react if, you know, how would our major religions react if we've discovered, you know, that there's life elsewhere? A lot of our religions don't account for that, and theirs didn't. I mean, even more so, it wasn't just, you know, it's like we are it. And it was interesting to see Star Trek go in that direction, though, and have a discussion about it.
And to be fair, they played it very safe, because if we're going to put it in that terms, which is exactly how the episode puts it, the defense minister or whatever he was represented the extreme conservative point of view, and the scientist represented the extreme liberal point of view, and it was... And neither
of them all form the head.
Both of them were
the Goldilocks
exactly,
prime
both
minister.
Both of them were wrong, and it took the president or prime minister, who ended up being the moderate of the between the two, who was actually the one that ended up being right. Who actually looked at the situation and said, "We should be here. We aren't here yet. We have not arrived at this point." You know, I'm not going to react in fear or panic, but I recognize that our society is not yet ready for this. I don't think that the defense guy, minister, whatever his, I don't remember his title. I don't think he was acting in the best interest of the society. He was acting in a place of fear of the unknown, of fear of change specifically, of fear of the destruction of his current society. And it took the prime minister, who had the wisdom, to say, "We should get to this place. We're just not there yet." Essentially, it's mirroring what I think maybe Star Trek is telling us where we are right now. Like, if aliens showed up in the sky right now, maybe it would be good for us, but could we handle it? Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I like to think that the woman represented TNG and the defense minister was a niner. Never mind. He assumed the worst was going to happen and everyone was out to get him.
Inflammatory language!
Well, I thought we were taking turns every week. Anyway. But yeah, I mean, because I think that is an interesting part of you know, because it would... Because even in this episode, First Contact, unlike the Vulcans in the movie First Contact, Picard didn't even wait for them to, like, launch the ship going at warp speed. Is like, "You got the schematics close enough. That's all
close
we really
enough.
Yeah, that's good." You don't have to actually build it. I mean, you know, we'll save you the time and trouble here, have all our technology.
Well, he wouldn't have done that if things didn't go south.
Yeah, because I mean, I think that's a... I mean, because think about that. It's like, and I don't know how it works, because we've never really seen, per se, that in any of the series. And maybe we haven't, I'm just not thinking of it. You know, okay, First Contact, all right, things go well. But you go from, like, just getting warp drive to, like, here's replicators, a holodeck, and transporters. Whoa. I mean, you know, to talk about going warp speed culture. And I think that's what the episode points out. And again, not to get philosophical or whatever, but our technology doesn't always match our culture. Mm. That sometimes one goes a little faster than the other, and sometimes you got to let the other one catch up. And so, you know, we could probably do a whole episode on that title or on that thought. But I thought that was a very interesting part of this episode. So, you know, for people who, you know, may have seen First Contact, the episode, I'm like, whatever. But I would definitely encourage people to watch it again, because I think there's definitely a lot you can get about the Prime Directive, about culture, about technology, about philosophy, blah, blah, blah.
I know sometimes it seems like Star Trek has a hard time with names, because, you know, we had the Emissary, and then but that's not the actual one we want to talk about. That's the pilot of, you know, DS9, and then we had First Contact, but that's not actually what we want to talk about. We want to talk about the awesome movie. So it's just hard finding really good, not used, you know, things, you know, to title our episodes. It's, or podcasts.
Or podcasts. Yeah. Okay, well, we've hit, you know, like I said, four episodes here of The Next Generation, The Prime Directive, all early episodes. I think we could go on and on talking about other episodes and everything else, but you know, let's just kind of get into some final thoughts here. So, like I know, The Prime Directive, it could go on forever, but let's just do final thoughts, whatever you want to say about the Prime Directive. So Daniel, I mean, what do you think? All these early episodes we've talked about, seasons 1 through 4, and of course, you know, mentioned Insurrection, we mentioned some other ones as well, and Packleds, but we'll go into those another date. But what do you think about how the TNG did about the Prime Directive? Was it good, bad, indifferent? What do you think?
20 seconds, go.
You know, we've talked here on Earl Grey about Canon Locked before, and if and when there's a new TV show, there are a few things I feel like they have to establish from the get-go to get the show running, and I think the Prime Directive is one of them. It's just, it's too nebulous, it's too undefined, it's too, we don't know what it means. Like, we have a rough idea, but it doesn't apply in some situations, and then it doesn't apply in others. Like, it's great as a plot device, but as a world-building exercise, it just falls flat. And for something so important, for something that's the fundamental principle of this society that we are supposed to aspire to, I really feel like the writers of Star Trek could do better. And they could take a stand and they could say, this is what we mean. Yes, you can save people from their planet exploding or a volcano, you know, erupting. But no, you cannot give them phasers. Like, until...
But the Klingons were giving them phasers.
Like, I just wish that, you know, fine. If you're going to make a hard and fast rule, then make the rule. It's fine if you break it. I don't even care if you break it, but establish the rule before you devote probably dozens and dozens of hours of Star Trek to it. TNG does just as good, you know, I think, as the rest of Star Trek. These early episodes, they're wishy-washy. You cannot get a good concept of what the Prime Directive is, and it's so frustrating to me as a viewer. And like I said, I love Watchers, hate Insurrection, I like First Contact. Justice is terrible. I mean, what?
Terribly good.
But you know, so it's like you know, let's get some consistency and let's build on it and. I like the opportunities it provides, but not at the expense of the entire the entire universe that we've tried to create. So that would be my biggest complaint about the Prime Directive.
All right, Darren, when we put you on trial for breaking the Prime Directive, what is your defense going to be?
Members of this tribunal, the first time a link in the chain is forged, dooms us all to talking about justice even more than...
Why are you trying to hide your pointy ears?
My second, third cousin was around. No, actually, I want to touch on like what Daniel just said, and I think that'd be really hilarious if, you know, this was set, let's say, like the Star Trek Online era, like it's, you know, another 100 years or so, and they're just like, yeah, Prime Directive didn't really work out for us. We pretty much just abolished it. Just do whatever the heck you want. And, you know, it just use your best judgment, because how could that possibly go wrong? But, yeah, and then they'll have a follow-up episode called Judgment instead of Justice.
That was an Enterprise episode. Anyway.
Again, like I said, you can't, you know, find new titles because they're all used already. But no, I think I agree with Daniel. I think it needs to be locked down, but you know, but again, we're also putting this small element of a TV show under a microscope, and obviously it had to kind of shift and evolve and change as the show was going. I mean, it's just like the torpedoes on Voyager. Like, they just shouldn't have said, we have X number of torpedoes and no way to replace them in the pilot. Just, I get you're trying to create some tension, but that was not a wise move, because you know you're going to break that rule. And so just the same way as, you know, they don't need to print the Prime Directive for me. I don't need to see all the ins and outs of it. It's just a... it's a guideline. It's more like guidelines, you know, towards what our characters should be doing. Because just like in Justice, you know, we are the Edo gods observing them, and we will, you know, be upset if Picard acts out of character and just flies in the face of the Prime Directive. Like, we expect him to act a certain way.
Now you have me thinking of the Edo Guardian as like an angry nerd at his computer, and be like, "Excuse me, you're not going by your own rules that
I'm
I saw."
Memory Alpha, which I am a web administrator of, it clearly states that the character of Jean-Luc Picard, he should always. Oh, sorry, my mom's calling. I have to go.
Okay. But yeah, I think one thing that I love the Prime Directive. I'm a big believer in, like, I'm the episode title escapes me, but the Don't Do Drugs episode, which I could have talked about, but I didn't. There's a scene of where Picard is talking to Beverly in the turbo lift, and basically, you can find this clip on YouTube, because it's basically like, he says that the Prime Directive, in his view, and I'm paraphrasing, is basically their civic religion. You know, he says it's a philosophy, and a correct one at that. And, I mean, that's how strongly he believes. But I think one thing that always amuses me about the Prime Directive in the Next Generation is that usually Jean-Luc is the only one that believes in it. Like, you know, like Riker's like, no, let's just go down and do this. And Beverly's like, no, we just, I'm like, it's like only one person swore this oath to uphold the Prime Directive. It's like Picard, the beachhead, that without him, they'd just be doing whatever the heck they want. So, but I do love Picard as sort of the representative of what the Prime Directive is supposed to mean.
Maybe it's just one of those, you know, in his first your eyes only captain meeting that he get as soon as he was promoted, that's all they really show you is the Prime Directive. No one else actually, you know, knows the Prime Directive. It's his job to know it and enforce it, which how could that possibly ever backfire?
Well, it's no Omega Directive. Well, it's been fun talking about the Prime Directive today, but this is just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek.fm this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Montgomery Scott.
It's really just there to tell a story that they couldn't tell with Kirk or Spock or McCoy.
This is true. An episode where Kirk is framed for the murder of a hooker would be...
Right. Awesome.
Completely different. It would be awesome, but...
Earl Grey.
Ships of TNG Part 2.
Commander Riker, why would you protect the inferior ship? I want its treasure. I want the other ship.
Darren, how long have you been keeping that one in your pocket?
Yeah,
you
I like
tell
that.
Us.
That was good.
Do a Ferengi.
The Ready Room.
Scientific Method.
She tells the woman that comes on the bridge, and she's like, "Well, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I'm gonna drive into these stars. It's gonna be great." Like, it's like, I'm just like,
the orb.
Till death do us part.
His are very quizzical in nature. They're of the scientist. They're of the somebody who is willing to accept, okay, what is this reality? What's going on? She's just all like, tell me what to do right now. You know, like,
right.
She, there's nothing spiritual about her.
To the journey!
One versus doctor's orders.
I was working full-time on top of being a full-time student, and I...
Listen, I don't want to hear your excuses, okay? I don't want to hear them.
Like, life was happening, and...
A great man once told me, if something's important to you, you make the time. Warp 5.
Undeveloped Enterprise stories.
But the idea here is that Porthos would become intelligent and would be the only member of the crew capable of communicating with a canine alien. So even Hoshi apparently... couldn't figure out this dog language.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
If Bull, Chimera.
I'd love to see an X-Files one shot with Scully and the hookers.
With, you know? Scully and the hookers?
Yeah.
That's a great name for a band.
We can call it Scully and the Hookers.
Melodic Treks.
Five musical favorites.
You know, I don't completely hate the opening theme. I just really think that Archer's theme should be the opening credits.
Continuing mission.
Star Trek Axelar with Alec Peters.
That's what we posit. We say it makes sense that at this point we know it's from TOS. They're not integrated, so our crews are not integrated, and we make a point of that. We don't avoid it. We make a point of it. And in Prelude to Axelar, they talk about that.
Literary Treks.
IDW Alien Spotlight Part 1.
Well, Chris, it's okay because they can see the Romulans from their house.
That's right.
So, from space, you know, you betcha. You know what? That's okay. I can see the Romulans from my starship. It's gonna be fine.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for Podcast Directory to get all the links. And if you'd like to contact us to share your thoughts about the Prime Directive and what it means and how you've broken it lately, you can just go to trek.fm/contact, and from there, choose the form that says Send a Show and select Earl Grey. These messages will be emailed to the three of us, and you can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page on trek.fm to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone, which we've never gotten one, so we'd love for you to be our first. The conversation is always going on with our podcast crew and other listeners in our forums section at trek.fm/forums. And finally, in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Well, before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps us bring Earl Grey to you each and every week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, to include Star Trek The Next Generation titles such as Reunion, narrated by Gates McFadden, and The Valiant, narrated by TV's Giles Anthony Stewart Head. Audible has something for everyone. And as a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today and catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've had yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Earl Grey and Trek.fm. And lastly, there's a way you can help us directly to support Earl Grey coming to you each and every week, and that's by adopting some cool-looking alien illustrations. If you go to trek.fm/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork you see on trek.fm. They're available as both badges and art prints, and there are different contribution levels for you to choose from. Just let us know which alien you would like and in which format. Again, you'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. All right, guys, before I go check the rule book here, Darren, if folks want to learn how they can break the Prime Directive and how they can defend themselves in a court of law, where they can they find you on the interwebs?
Oh, they can find me online on Twitter under Dr. Sci-Fi. That's D-R-S-C-I-F-I. They can also listen to me talk about science fiction toys on the Dr. Sci-Fi show. That's this month's topic, and they can find that on iTunes or at drscifi.com.
Awesome. And Daniel, if anyone wants to get your personal commentary to the episode Who Watches the Watchers, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, they can find me on Twitter, and that is at OneUpDan, and that is the number one, not the word.
All right. And if anyone wants to talk to me about all the philosophies and civic and civil and all other kinds of religions and beliefs out there in the wide world and universe, they can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant. That's NC like North Carolina. And if you missed our live recording broadcast last week, you can just follow the link in the show notes and mark that start date in your calendar, because can you believe it? You may have missed it 9 times. And that would have surprised the hell out of me. Well, we'll see you next week. Make it so.
Engage.
Live long and prosper.
Fire.